Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome all of you all over the world, and especially the 47,000 just immediate downloads and the 67,000 that came to look at articles that we have yesterday up on our website. The hundreds of thousands of brand new listeners on a weekly basis, you are all welcomed. And later on in the program, we'll be talking with Myron, our social media expert, about what we're doing to make this the one place where all important social issues are offered in a definitive manner, meaning all of the articles, documentaries, books, organizations, go-to petitions, anything that can help us expand our consciousness, that has no political affiliation, that is unbiased, that is simply the truth for you, but definitive. In fact, at a time when everybody is looking for micro-information, bits and pieces, we've gone in just the opposite direction. I had a meeting with my staff recently, and one of my publishers said, "Gee, Gary, your new book is too big. We can't do it this size." And I said, "Why?" "Because the average person's only reading about 30 pages in a book." Okay. I'm not interested in writing a book for the average person. I'm not interested in doing broadcasts for the average person. I don't do lectures for the average person. Because look carefully at the average person and try to see if you can define what an average person is. Are they protesting any inequality? Are they looking to help those who are suffering around them? Are they looking to improve the quality of their lives, not just their standard of living? Are they being conscious about the purchase that they make to first see, do they actually need this that they're purchasing? Can they afford it? And what will they do with it when they have to dispose of it? Is it biodegradable? Are they looking at the body politic at all levels and ask, is this the type of government? Are these the individuals who are there to serve the public? What kind of media do these people watch? Is it empowering, entertaining, enlivening? Or is it just mind-numbingly stupid, taking the worst elements of human nature, violence and betrayal and degradation, and trying to raise them to a high form of cultural acceptance? Who are these average people? Who are they? I find people who are dirt poor, who have more ethics and common sense and a positive approach to life than some of the wealthiest people I've counseled, and I've counseled some of the most powerful, wealthy people on the planet, heads of whole countries I've counseled, ruling imperial families, the top of the food chain have sat across me. I've counseled them, been on my property where I've detoxed and helped them. Not once was there a conversation about their wealth or power person. It was just about them as a human being. And boy, when you talk with a person as a human being, you find out who's average and who's not. Average is what we all believe should be the accepted norm. I challenge that. I'm looking at the person who chooses not to accept that which is not acceptable and to protest what deserves to be protested, to accept what is enlivening and share that. And then suddenly you see the people who are willing to go to an effort to make changes. That's not a normal person. That's not an average person. That's an exceptional person. And it has nothing to do with wealth or education. It has to do with character and quality of mind. In that case, then, I believe that we should be doing program after program with backup information that is definitive, that has more information than what you would ever be able to go through or even need. So that no matter what a person wants to find out on a given topic, whether it's gas hydrofracking, which is today's topic, or nuclear, which is tomorrow, or whether it was sugar, which was 2 days ago or 3 days ago, every day the most definitive amount of information that you could actually use to make intelligent choices is there for you free as a public service. What you choose to do with it is your business, but I believe that there's a growing number of people who are not average, who not only want to read a book, but want to read a book that empowers them and want to do something with it, to use these as just tools. So when we all get online to try to be average, you better look ahead at the end of that line and see what the reward is. Those are my thoughts. Today, no guests, two little short segments of newsmakers. I want to do commentaries today, my own, or a combination of my own and others. For example, Gary Weiss, St. Martin's Press, The Horrors of an Ayn Rand World, Why We Must Fight for America's Soul. And how many people will be interested in hearing that? Also, watch out what you eat. It could be killing you slowly and sweetly, says a new major study of the science for a Center for Science and the Environment from all over the world. Also, data mining. I'm going to be giving a lot of insight today on bills that I'll bet none of you are aware of. But they're very important because it would mean the end of privacy on the Internet. Censorship of the Internet and mining every single email, photograph, personal, confidential text message that you've ever done. Are you aware of it? Are you aware there's a bill? And who's sponsoring it? You will today. Also, we keep hearing from people that we have to support a corporate America because it's the corporate America that transforms us to a higher standard of living. You'll hear Sean Hannity and others proclaim this over and over again. Okay? With William Lasnik, AlterNet, on how American corporations transform from producers to predators. We'll take a look at the latest on the environment. And time permitting, Too Smart to Fail, Notes on an Age of Folly by Thomas Frank. So you see, today we have a lot to deal with. I want to go through as many as possible. And anytime you feel you would like to call in and share your points of view, please do so. Do you remember I said that I didn't always keep, or at least those of you who listen on a regular basis, that as a scientist for 30 years at the Institute of Applied Biology, and also having the first scientific research farm on organic farming in New York State's history, the Fertiller Farm upstate, I found that what I did in the laboratory did not always equal what was done in nature. And I felt that what was happening in nature was there's a different exchange of energies, which then impacted everything that you would do. It would be like your mother making you a sandwich, and then you making the same identical sandwich. Now, don't tell me that you don't find your mother's sandwich tastier. You do. We all do. If mom took, you know, some Campbell's tomato soup and a grilled cheese sandwich, we loved it. If we did it, yeah, not so. So there was the component of who does something for us, and then that means about the chef. Now, I used to have a restaurant. I've owned four restaurants, and sometime in the future I'll own another one. I actually was going to open up a restaurant right next door to my health food store because a place went out of business just one door over. And I was so busy on the road where I am now filming every day that I didn't have a chance to actually go in and negotiate. Well, the good news is, Candle Cafe, which is a great restaurant, opened in Bart, who I've known for 30 years, and his partner own it, and I'm sure people now will have spectacular food on the Upper West Side. So in the near future, in the next year or two, I will open up a gourmet vegan restaurant because I was just thinking how many people want something where the menu changes every day. And that's what I used to do. I'd never serve the same dish twice. Every single day. It was a real challenge. It confused a lot of people because they get used to something they like and they want it every day. And I say, well, why not try something new every day? And then only repeat it once a week. And that's what I did with the Fertiller restaurant up on 108th and Broadway. And some of you, I'll bet, even ate at the Fertiller restaurant. It was the first gourmet vegan restaurant in the United States. And it was there for 6 years. And it was a wonderful experience. You get a whole meal for $2.50. I remember at the time that it was always about the quality of the chef. And we had a chef that was so up, so positive. Ron Gilbert was his name. Wonderful human being. Artist, had hair down to the bottom of his rear. I mean, he had long hair and very athletic. He was a dancer. He would go out and meditate at the back of the restaurant for an hour or two, even when there were people waiting for food. And then he'd come in and people would, what's going on? And I put up a sign saying, our chef is meditating. Please be patient. When he has the right energy to put into the food, he will make it. And finally, people got to be aware of that. So then nobody got grumpy anymore. And then suddenly Ron would appear and he'd start to put together these magical combination of dishes. We only had two entrees, two salads, two soups, two desserts each day. That was it. But boy, did 400 people a night. You couldn't get in that place from 4 in the afternoon to 11 at night. And it was a congregation of social movers and shakers, activists of every type. They all hung out there. The Berrigan brothers, they all were there. It was fun. I really enjoyed it. But I noticed that when we had another chef who was equally capable, actually a graduate of a culinary institute, made beautiful dishes, great presentation, he was always struggling in his life. He was always in some dysfunctional relationship. And you could tell there was a different energy in the food. Hard to imagine that. Now, someone would say, but that's lacking objectivity. It's working on an energy level where you can't use the same measurement of objectivity. And people also noticed when a happy chef was in the kitchen, a loving chef, a creative chef, a joyful chef, the food tasted different. Now, how many times have you said to someone, what's wrong? And they said, nothing. Well, I know something's wrong. No, nothing's wrong. But you know it. You feel the energy. You're picking up on the energy. The energy is not in sync. It's out of sync. Now, let's go from there to what I used to experience when I had animals in experiments, not non-invasive experiments, always very humane, to see how I could get them to live longer lives and what I could do to enhance their environment. And companionship always was a big issue. I noticed what would happen when there would be, let's say, an abandoned animal, like an abandoned sheep or abandoned goat or cow or whatever it might be, and how important it was to immediately reestablish a bond of unconditional love. Because if it wasn't, it'd get weak. No matter how much you fed it and how accurately you fed it, it would get weak and it would suffer and it would be malnourished because there was not the bonding energy. The bonding energy is crucial. Think of how many women don't want to have the children that they're carrying, but forced obligations through religious concepts and dogma or circumstances they find themselves in. They go, do you not think that that developing fetus is not picking up on all the energy that you're not wanted, you're a bother? Oh, yes, it does. Something that's almost never discussed because it would get a lot of people angry about the energy that we put into everything we do has a consequence, and it's cumulative. In any case, back in the laboratory, the rats downstairs, and we did this once, I came back on a Monday morning, and I said to the lab director, are you willing to try an experiment? He said, what kind? I said, I'd like for you to set aside 500 rats, and then give me 500 identical rats from the same litters. We will do nothing different in the food, the lighting, and the water. Identical. The difference is that I'm going to play music and let them run free. He says, how's that possible? You can't have rats. I said, yeah, let them run all over the place. Because upstairs I had my own space, and downstairs they did all the chemotherapy work and all the replacement for methadone work and all this work they were working towards. Patents, I wasn't. So they said, fine. So for 1 year we measured 500 rats downstairs in a completely different environment upstairs. Potted plants and little fica bushes and natural lighting and open space. They could all day long run around and play. Same 500. Mine lived much longer, 20% longer. Mine were healthier. And never once did I get bitten, ever, in 30 years. Interesting, because people downstairs were getting bitten every day. And so at the end of the year, I said to this person, you see the difference. There's a statistically significant difference. The guy said, I don't understand why. I said, it was simple, the environment. So he had this whole discussion. He didn't believe that it was real. I said, it is real. I said, here's what we're not taking into account in linear reductionistic science. The mindset of the person engaged in a healing process or in any endeavor. The mindset with true and pure intent. Does the intent come from a conditioned intent or from a spiritual intent? Big difference in the outcome. Because a lot of true believers end up with being committed to wanting to get something accomplished, but they're coming from a dysfunctional energy. So even with the pure belief, the outcome is substantially altered from someone coming from a more pure energy. And I said, then look at the difference. Okay. That argument wasn't won. It was just set aside. Science Daily, today, as published in Nature, the most respected scientific journal in the world, quote, change from a lab to natural setting dramatically alters biological and genetic determinants of behavior. Let me repeat this. Change from lab to natural settings dramatically alters biological and genetic determinants of behavior. Quote, a unique experiment carried out in Leicester Garden and concurrently in a garden in Italy has yielded surprising results that has changed the scientific knowledge and is published in the current journal Nature. And it goes on to talk about this particular experiment. And what it's saying is that what we had historically thought was the only gold standard, that which is in a laboratory under strict, sterile, completely controlled conditions, should be replicatable anywhere else, and it's not true. Meaning, what happens in the natural world, under natural circumstances, can have a much more positive, powerful effect upon our genes. The very thing I saw from the chef in the kitchen, the very thing I saw from people who wanted to work on projects, the energy they brought in their own personal life to a project determined the quality and outcome of that project. The determinant of showing animals that were given an opportunity to bond in nature and always have companions and always be loved, completely different than the same animals in the same circumstances in a confined environment. Science has had it wrong all the time on this, and it's just being finally challenged today. How about that? So for all of you who knew that you felt better in nature, you did. Your genes came alive, you were able to heal, you were. Let's go back about 20 years ago. There was a person who came to see me. And I didn't know who was outside. I don't know who's outside. I don't even get a list. They just sit outside until one person leaves and another person comes in. Then it was about 1 o'clock in the morning when I finally had a chance to see this person. And they talked to me, and they were a well-known person. Everybody in this audience instantly knew who this person was. And they had a lot of problems with alcohol and other issues. And it was affecting their career. And I suggested that what they needed, and this person had gone through all kinds of detoxes, and I said, you just need to go and hug a cow. The person looked at me like I had two heads and got up, started to walk out of the room as if he was insulted. And then turned at the door and says, what the hell are you talking about? I said, you need to hug a cow because clearly the things you've been hugging haven't been hugging you back. And he said, what do you mean? So then we had this conversation, and about 3 weeks later, this person shows up to go upstate to my farm at that time. And he spent a month and totally detoxed. And I remember one day we were sitting, and it was in a barn, and it was in a spring, and it was a spring warm rain, and all the animals were inside. And we were sitting on a bale of hay, and he was just sitting there. He said, man, he said, I've never felt this good in my life. And I said, okay, why do you think you feel this good? He said, I don't know. He said, I'm never in blue jeans and like this, a bib overall and with a straw hat. And I've never in my life sat on a bale of hay and had a little heifer sitting here that I'm petting with his head up on my lap and a cow sitting there chewing her cud. It just doesn't get any better than this. And I said, so take away the cud, chewing cow, take away the heifer looking at you with their big, daisy eyes, take away the comfort of being in a barn and looking out at a field and smelling the fresh clover as the grass was cut this morning, and now the rain is just amplifying that. Take all that away. Would you feel the same? He said, it's this whole environment. I'm not used to it. You know, I go to a detox, and it's some of these, you know, very expensive, very sterile environments where, you know, he said, this is a farm. You know, going out and harvesting the lettuce that I ate for lunch today. That was such a treat. You know, growing, picking something that was grown and eating it, and going over to a tree and pulling an apple off and eating. He says, you don't do these things where I come. It's always someone giving you something. He said, now at least I know what's been missing in my life. And indeed, when he left, the whole takeaway message was, you become the environment that you're a part of. You become a part of the people in your life. If you're around abusive people, threatening people, accusatory people, people who want to make themselves out to be a victim and you're the culprit, you become that. And your DNA alters. That's why you have to make choices about you are going to be a healthier, happier person when you just stop everything, look at your life, and reassess what you want to do going forward. And there's a time when we all have to accept that the chapter in our life that we've been living is over. Stop trying to relive it. Stop trying to change it. It won't be changed. You can't relive any moment. That's why you should be so mindful and present for every moment of your life. Now, so I just wanted to share that with you because I bet no one else in the United States is talking about this. But I like to talk about stuff that really is important, because that's really important, because it changes everything we know about the sterile scientific linear reductionistic model of medicine and healing and health and the environment and the workplace and the home environment. This is from the Center for Science and Environment. Watch out for what you eat, because it could be killing you. And then they go into some depth here about the trans fats, the refined carbohydrates, sugar, and salt. And they're claiming that the worst of all is the terrible fats. Quote, the World Health Organization says that in a balanced diet, a maximum of 1% of total energy should come from trans fats. Therefore, an adult male can have about 2.6 grams of trans fats per day, while an adult female, about 2.1 grams. Tests reveal a dirty truth of misinformation, misbranding, wrong labeling, and obfuscation. Indulged in by many companies, some of whom are on the top of the charts. They show that many junk foods claim that they have zero trans fats. Some don't even bother to mention how many trans fats they have. A child who eats one of those immensely savory McDonald's Happy Meals finishes up 90% of all of his daily requirements of trans fats. Then it goes on to talk about how many other places you can get trans fats and how many other places you eat bad foods. And what it says is that, you know, virtually everything the average person in America and Europe is eating that's processed is bad. So now they are asking, why should there be any question about why we're so sick? Everything we're eating is bad. Well, how about the vaccines? Now, that's another big issue that we should pay some attention to. Mike Adams over at Natural News says this, and I'll quote this. Vaccine failure admitted. Whooping cough outbreaks higher among children already vaccinated. I'll quote, for several years, Natural News has maintained that many vaccines actually cause the very infectious disease they claim to prevent. Measles vaccine, for example, actually causes measles, and flu shot vaccines actually increase susceptibility to flu. Now we have an open admission of precisely this point. New research reported by Reuters reveals that whooping cough outbreaks are higher, much higher, among vaccinated children compared with unvaccinated children. This is based on a study led by Dr. David Witt, an infectious disease specialist at Kaiser Permanente Medical Center in San Rafael, California. And so whooping cough infections are more common among children already vaccinated. The whooping cough vaccines have never been tested for long-term efficacy. Doctors openly admit the vaccine doesn't provide lasting protection, but doctors and government authorities mindlessly push the vaccine anyway. That's essentially like saying we know these vaccines don't really work, but everybody should get vaccinated anyway. Okay, well, I got a new documentary on vaccines coming at you, and we'll address this in greater depth. And finally, the sunshine vitamin, that's vitamin D, could boost critically ill survival rates. Boy, this is important. This is from the International Journal of Medicine. Quote, vitamin D supplements could help to boost survival rates of critically ill patients in hospital intensive care units. So, and this was done at Tel Aviv University. Quote, we observe longer survival time among vitamin D sufficient patients. Well, that's good. So anyone over the age of, let's say, 60 should be making sure that you're getting 2,000 to 5,000 units of vitamin D a day without question. Now to our environmental section. And since our theme of the day is on the subject of gas hydrofracking, and we're going to speak in a second with Myron, here is the latest on this from the Huffington Post. Fracking companies make top bids for water alongside Colorado farmers. I'll just quote a couple paragraphs. While there has always been competition for water in Colorado, today's contenders no longer just include farmers, but oil and gas industry too. The Denver Post reports that an auction hosted by the Northern Water Conservancy District for unallocated water diverted from the Colorado River Basin saw top bids from hydrofracking companies. Hydrofracking, or fracking, is a process of extracting gas from the Earth's shale rocks layers using first vertical and then horizontal drilling methods so that the pipe makes a deep L shape underground. Through that pipe, a mixture of water and sand and chemicals, also known as fracking fluid, is pumped down into the shale to break up the rock and extract natural gas. A concern raised by Gary Volkner, director of Save the A Baudry coalition, is that water first use for agriculture can stay in the hydrological cycle longer, but water contaminated by fracking is generally removed completely. Any transfer, quote, of water from rivers and farms to drilling and hydrofracking will negatively impact Colorado's environment and wildlife. You bet. So what does this mean? This means that You have to have a lot of water to grow things, but that is minuscule compared to how much water you need for gas hydrofracking. Well, if you have a limited amount of water to begin with, and you start using it for gas hydrofracking, then and they own the water, and they own the mineral rights, then what's that going to do to all those farms and orchards in Colorado? Watch how many of them go out of business. They'll dry up. Also, this is important. Senators who voted to protect oil tax breaks, that's about $200 billion a year, received $23,582,500 from Big Oil, quote from Rebecca Letter. In a vote of 51 to 47, 43 Senate Republicans and 4 Democrats filibustered to protect $24 billion in tax breaks for big oil. Although the majority voted for Senator Robert Mendez's bill, it fell short of the 16 needed. The only two Republicans to break ranks were Susan Collins and Olympia Snow. So what it was is this. The 47 senators voted against the bill have received $23 million in career contributions from oil and gas. So who paid them the most got their vote. It's just that simple. As if the oil industry needed $24 billion in tax breaks. They make a lot of money. But now you know who got that and who didn't and why. Obama administration takes steps towards more oil drilling. Shell's oil spill plan for Beaufort Sea drilling approved. Seismic surveys for oil off of East Coast gets okay. Quote, Common Dream staff, the Obama administration has taken steps towards increased oil drilling today in Alaska and off the East Coast. It approved Shell oil spill response plan for the Arctic waters of the Beaufort Sea. A move slammed by environmental groups who warn of a likely environmental catastrophe if Shell is given its final permits. The administration has also allowed today seismic exploratory surveys of oil off the coast of Virginia in the Atlantic Ocean. What happens if there's a blowout? What happens if there's a deep water blowout? What happens to the Arctic? They don't care. Global food crisis imminent. Listen again. This is from a group of scientists, 900 of the world's greatest scientists, on the Commission on Sustainable Agriculture and Climate Change. Quote, global food crisis imminent. Drastic changes needed. Planet under pressure. All the scientists said that if we do not have an immediate shift to global sustainable agriculture and decreased waste, then we are too late. Well, good for them for bringing this to our attention. The reality is there will be no change. So I commend them. They did the right thing. But no government, no corporations are going to support any changes that cost them profits. So everyone will continue to go into denial or make it seem insignificant. And all the while, the world's temperatures will increase, and then that will cause disaster. So for those of us who do care, we are moving towards buying lands and in areas that are sustainable. And to make sure that we have perpetual spring water, Jurassic water, and quality soil, because we have time to develop that and develop it into small communities, so at least there will be thousands of small sustainable communities around this country and millions around the world. I'll shortly be over in Ireland meeting with some of the leading eco village and conservationists over there on this very issue. Following up on that, warming Arctic forewarns ecological ruin. U.S. Coast Guard captain, quote, no one is prepared to deal with a disaster in the Arctic. From Common Dreams staff, quote, as Arctic waters warm and new passages are opened, increased human activity is set to bring new possibilities of environmental disasters. Countries including the U.S., Russia, Norway, Canada are beefing up their military presence in the region as the possibilities of exploiting the vast mineral resources of the Arctic are increasing with the warming of the planet. U.S. Coast Guard Captain, Military Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations in New York, Melissa Burt, says, quote, I don't worry about a war in the Arctic, but I do worry that we're not prepared to deal with a major disaster there. No one is. But as more people go there, it becomes much more likely, end quote. And this is at the same time that the Obama administration approved Shell's Arctic oil spill plan, and which is all theoretical. This is from one leading environmental critic, climatestorytellers.org. Quote, if Shell goes there to drill, they will kill the Arctic Ocean along the way. You bet. Also separately, melting Arctic may redraw global geopolitical map. That's going to happen. And finally, shifting foundations threaten to undermine China's cities. Now, let me put this in perspective. China, as of today that we're in, passed the United States as the number one consumer of produce in the world, shopping for produce. We were number one. Now they're number one. Because more Chinese have money to go into a supermarket or store and buy produce. My concern 10 years ago, 7 years ago, 3 years ago, and a year ago, when I did commentaries on this, was that China, unfortunately, has used its great scientific insights and architectural skills to build mammoth mega cities, actually beautiful cities, but they have not taken into account where we're going to get the water and how we're going to get rid of the debris. As a result, China also has the worst desertification, where the desert is just has eaten 13,000 villages and towns in the last 10 years. That's 13,000 where people lived, gone, all under sand. And there's no way to stop that sand. They haven't put the resources there. Too little, too late. Now, I said that as they take out the water for millions of people living in a city, the new cities, that will collapse the ground. You shift that when you take out hundreds of millions of gallons per day out of a given area. This is today from The Guardian. Quote, shifting foundations threaten to undermine China's cities. Quote, a crack in the tarmac on a road in the middle of Pudong Business District told Shanghai residents that the subsoil their city was shifting. It was not so much the size of the rift, about 8 meters long and only a few centimeters across, more its location that caused concern. It was at the foot of the Shanghai Tower project. Due for completion in 2 years, the tower will stand 632 meters high and is just next to two other giants, the World Financial Center and the Jinmo Tower, rising nearly as high. The appearance of cracks in the ground and the publication of photographs on blogs have fueled questions in recent weeks. Quote, the surface cracks, which are caused by a usual settlement of foundation ditch. Well, not true, it turns out. The pressure exerted by skyscrapers is a minor cause. The big cause is they've been taking out the water to supply to the growing populations in these expanding cities. As a result, when you take the water out, these are coming from aquifers and it eliminates the pressure to equalize the weight up above. So you build these giant skyscrapers and you have sinkholes. As a result, all over China, foundational shifts. Look for more on that. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. Now to our commentary issue part of our program. I'm going to ask you to call in and share your comments and thoughts after I share these. First, we have been told repeatedly that money shouldn't come to small businesses, the ones who employ the most Americans, who are the most stable, who last the longest, and who really care about their local communities, and who care about quality of life issues. After all, how many people who own a barbershop or some other small business in a community go to the same churches or synagogues or mosques and socialize together, go to school together, kids go together? So you're much more likely to care about the social relationship you have. And people generally go to work and hope to work there for a long period of time. Instead, we're told, no, give the money to the major corporations. That will all trickle down. The trouble is you don't look at the facts. The facts are that the top 500 U.S. corporations, I'm talking about the Fortune 500, just this past year, they generated $10.7 trillion in sales. They ended up with $702 billion in profits. Now, they employ about 25 million people around the globe, and a lot of those are outside the United States. So then we're told, well, gee whiz, isn't that a good thing? No, it's not, because for the last 30 years, top executives have been giving themselves massive bonuses and compensation packages, and they've made the profitability of their companies as investment vehicles very attractive. But it's also caused a virtual elimination of the quality middle class in the United States. To what we have now is we have an under middle class in the United States. In effect, they've gutted the quality that once was there and where people could have a quality education and then go into the work experience. And all we have to do is look back. Just look back and look at the alignment. There, you know, always like our Secretary of Defense and General Motors CEO Charles Wilson thought that what was good for General Motors was good for America. Well, that was back in the 1950s, and indeed that was true. That's when we had so many people working, and mainly in unions. So the unions represented a way of having collective bargaining and seeing that people got paid properly. Well, today we have financialization. That's the big gorilla on the block, where people want to make money off money. They don't want to make it off a product sold. They don't want to open up a new factory. They want to close a factory. They want to outsource a factory. They want cheap labor to make a cheap product to be brought in and sold in cheap stores. So where exactly are we supposed to get all these new jobs from, either the left or right, since they both are corporatized? They're both monetizing debt through the Federal Reserve. They're both getting enormous amounts of money. Neither party represents people, the average person, the working class person, the underclass person, the poor person, the upper middle class person. They don't represent them. It's a myth. Now, on top of that, then we're told that, gee whiz, we should be more like objectivist. Well, the grand priestess of all objectivism in the United States in our history was Ayn Rand. Remember, she wrote Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead, among other books. But take a look with Gary Weiss and others who ask a basic question. What would the world be like if the objectivists win elections, if they're in power? Well, they are right now. Obama's won. He's an objectivist. He talks like he's not, but he is. All of his policies show. But virtually all the people running in the Republican Party are. Here's what it means. They want us to literally look at the government as an inherently negative entity. It is not. A bloated government, a corrupt government, a government that usurps power to itself, that is a bad government. But we need government. We need a government that works for us. So what would the world look like if they had their absolute way? If Mitt Romney had his way, if any of these, Rick Sanitarium had his way, and that's where he belongs, we'd have no government except the police, courts of law, and armed services. There'd be no regulation of anything anywhere. You'd have no Medicare, no Medicaid, no Social Security, no public schools, no public hospitals, no public anything. In fact, just individuals looking out for himself, because that's what objectivists do. In effect, objectivist America will be a dark age of an uninhindered free enterprise. We would be reverting back to a form of Darwinism. And every objectivist knows that. So, understand something. You wouldn't have building codes, so you'd have inadequate building. You wouldn't have inspections on airplanes or trains or boats. You would not have the requirements of doctors, and you wouldn't have the requirements in the hospitals. You would have no safe workspace in America. There'd be none provided. Do you remember the Triangle factory where they crammed their employees into workspaces without proper exits, and then they didn't have fire codes, and they didn't have fire stairwells, and then dozens of workers jumped to their death on March 25th, 1911? That's what happens, and around the world, it still happens. In an objectivist world, according to Gary Weiss, the reset button would be pushed on government services that we take for granted. They would not be cut back, but reduced. They would vanish completely. In an objectivist world, roads would go unplowed in the snows of winter. Bridges would fall as the government withdrew from the business of maintaining them, unless some private citizen would find it in their own rational interest to voluntarily take up the slack. That's not going to happen. Who would repair the rust in the frayed cables? Public parks and land for the tiniest vested pocket patch of green, we wouldn't have that. You'd sell off all your open land in the newly liberated mega corporation expansion into our parks. Airplane traffic would be grounded unless a profit-making capitalist found it in his own selfish interest to fund the air traffic control system. If it could make a profit, fine. If not, tough luck. The market had spoken. The Coast Guard would stay in port while storm-tossed mariners drowned, as they did in old days. Fires would rage in the remnants of silent forests, vegetation, wildlife no longer protected by rangers. No, we wouldn't have environmental laws. Any kind of toxic substance could be put into any food that we wanted. With industry no longer restrained by carbon emission standards, the Earth would bake in self-generated heat. Ice cap melting would accelerate, extreme weather would become even more commonplace, and sea coasts would sink beneath the waves. Communities ravaged by hurricanes, floods, tornadoes would be left to fend for themselves. No longer burdened by the consciousness of the selfish, we would live in a guilt-free world. The poor and the elderly, freed from dependence on character-destroying, government-subsidized medical care, would die as bravely in the mind of the Ayn Rand faction. Minimum wage laws would become worthless. You wouldn't have minimum wage. You'd work for a dollar if you had to. All laws protecting consumers would be erased from the statute books. Mass transit would grind to a halt in the big cities. Corporations no longer be enslaved by antitrust law, so we would have only monopolies, and globe-spanning, price-fixing cartels would flourish. Graft and greed, worse than you could ever imagine, would be the element of the day. And what would happen if you wanted to sue someone? You couldn't. Security laws and stock market regulations would be eliminated. Corporations would operate in secret if they so desired, or with only selective cursory disclosures to their investors and consumers. Insider trading, now illegal, would become the norm. Income taxes would end, so the lowest paid 10 cents an hour non-OSHA supervisory factory worker would enjoy wages taxed at the rate of zero, as would billionaires. Such is the Ayn Rand vision of paradise. Such is the way that we're going. So look carefully at what people promise you, and then look at the consequences. I'm Gary Null. That's the commentary. Your thoughts. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Your turn. Now we're going to take, as we do once a week, a few moments, and I mean just a few moments, to offer you a special on something that is very important for our well-being and health. And I don't believe that we've offered this in more than a year. Our Supreme Health Formula tablets, 300 tablets, buy one and get one free. That's a big savings. For many, they know this is the ultimate multiple vitamin. It is a breakthrough product designed by myself for people who are serious about their commitment to optimal health. I put everything that I know that we need that can maximize our well-being into this, from the vitamin A and the C. There's 1,200 milligrams of vitamin C in just one serving, and vitamin D and B1, 2, 6, 12, folic acid, but then also the very important things like mushroom complex, milk thistle, bilberry, lycopene, grapeseed extract, acerolin, hesperidin, glutathione and linoleic acid, ginger and trimethylglycine and phosphatidylserine and isoflavonegenistein, 200 milligrams, by the way, and lutein, 25 milligrams, much higher than what anyone else does, and MSM and L-taurine and N-acetylcysteine at 500 milligrams each, and ornithine alpha-ketoglutarate, very important, at 500 milligrams, and choline bitartrate at 500 milligrams, and bromelain and acetyl L-carnitine. This is the superstar of superstars of multiple vitamins. This gives you a full spectrum, and it's on sale. You buy one, you get one free. It's just that simple. I want you to call the following number. This is our number for people to call in. And so call this number, and you can buy one and get one free. Buy one, get one free. It's, what is the number? 877. Let me just think. I'm out on the road, and I don't have that number in front of me. 877-627-50. I'm going to ask my engineer to tell me what that number is. 877-627-5065. Again, 877-627-5065. Supreme Health Formula. Superstar. It rocks. Full spectrum, all the exotic, most important, most essential nutrients we can put in our body. 300 tablets. We're in stock and goes right out to you. Now, I'm going to go. James, your turn.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate that, and I really would like to address this whole idea of objectivism, and there's nothing objective about it. It's a very narrow, defined concept, And it can only exist when we live in this narrow illusion of separation, when in fact we're part of a cosmic reality. We are in fact stardust. We're interrelated. Everything in life is an integrated oneness. And until we understand that, we're in peril. That's the important thing for us to look at. We need to join hands and understand that we are part of something so precious. Cast aside these very superficial identities about name, race, identity, and see how powerful we are underneath this. Get in touch with the heart mind, where our real intelligence lies. This is so important. This is about survival, not survival, but thrival. This is about going forward. This time is offering us an opportunity to break through this myopia that we have been living with for so long and connect to natural systems, to the real world out there, Gary.
James, that's what James, you sound an awful like someone that I listen to on Sunday. Are you on the radio on Sunday afternoon 3?
Yes, I am, Gary.
Is this James Joseph? Are your last name Joseph?
It is indeed.
So you're James Menzel Joseph. You're one of our nation's most insightful artists and sculptors.
Why, thank you, Gary, and I just felt I should call in and comment on objectivism. Nothing objective about that.
Well, thank you. By the way, for people in the audience, James is related to Germany's most prolific 19th century artist, Adolf Menzel. And Joseph has been a leading anti-war activist. He is quite simply one of the most progressive voices in the world. And he's a very harsh critic of Western society and its threats to a sustainable future. And so good for you. The Art of Survival, that's the name of your show.
Yes, Gary. Well, it is indeed.
You're on Sundays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific, on the Progressive Radio Network. James, thank you for listening and calling in. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us.
It was a real pleasure, and keep up the good work, Gary.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Otter, so much.
Well, he's one of the most remarkable voices on the planet, so thank you very much. That was a surprise. And let's see who else we have here. I'm going to take another call. I'm kind of flying blind because I'm out on the road, so I don't have the same. Jason and Myron in the studio. Let's go to Myron. Myron, nice to have you with us.
How you doing, Gary?
Great. I'm out on the road, don't have access to anything, so you'll have to kind of lead us here. Myron, what we're trying to do is this. We are in the process of creating the most definitive information, social activation website in the world, where people without any political affiliation or ideological affiliation, is just about taking the most progressive, important information that can help people and giving it to them in enormous volumes at a time when everyone else wants tiny little information. We want a lot. And today it's all on gas hydrofracking. Yesterday it was all about genetic engineering. The day before it was on sugar. Tomorrow it's on nuclear. Monday it's on depleted uranium. Every day we're taking hundreds of articles, documentaries, information, and loading it in there for people who want to get involved. Tell us, take it from there.
That's right, Gary. We're compiling some of the best information out there for progressive minds that are like-minded to be able to share, to take action, to watch videos, and just to educate others about what they know is some of the most pressing issues of our time. So we've collected all those on prn.fm. It's not .com, it's .fm. And if you go up to special topics, you'll see all of them right there. As well, you'll see the latest videos and articles below that, and we have some featured ones too. So I invite everybody to really check those out and really peruse all of our articles, because we've got a lot of them. And it might be overwhelming for some, but pick out the best ones and share it with five others if you can. And let's get some movement going, because you can see that there's no movement happening in politics.
Well, it's a circular movement. Unfortunately, current TV that I have a lot of respect for, the documentaries they do. They do some absolutely first-class documentaries on Vanguard. But now all their programming is virtually get Obama elected. And that's unfortunate because we already have MSNBC and some of the programs on Pacifica doing that. Instead of being really honest about issues, and we do the honest issues, and that's what makes a difference. And it's always different every day on each of the programs. And so we need people to share the information. Always ask yourself, you've just read something, you've watched something, you've listened to something that's helped you. How can you extend that to other people? Everyone knows another person or 10 other people or 5 other. Share it. Word of mouth. We're under their radar. And yet, our numbers are off the chart. Jason, nice to have you with us.
Hey, Gary, how are you?
Good. Jason, you have you see the numbers that are coming in there. I don't. I'm out here. But you've been telling me that at the current rate of brand new, mainly young listeners, we're going to be hitting 1,200,000 to 1,300,000 brand new listeners, unheard of in television or radio.
It's absolutely amazing, Gary. It's great to see that in 1 month that our website's been up with the few problems we had with the server not having enough space. We still had over 57,000 new people join us in less than a month. So the way things are working, we're going to have people joining us at a crazy good rate. So I'm really happy about everyone joining us. And I think with the new website that Myron put together, that we have people that can get more information than anywhere else. They can get the latest, best shows. And I think we're moving on them great.
Videos, podcasts,
okay,
everything.
Thank you, yeah.
And you can explore them all now from our homepage, so that's really great.
Well, I'm asking people to share information. I want to end our program today by giving you some of the concerns I have. This is the latest, and this I'm sure people are not aware of. There's something new. On March 22nd, Attorney General Eric Holder and Director of the National Intelligence James Clapper, Jr., signed off on a new guideline allowing National Counterterrorism Center, which is a post-9/11 creation, to hold on to information about Americans in no way connected to terrorism for 5 years. Quote, Clapper said, will enable the National Counterterrorism Center to accomplish its mission more practically and effectively. That's nonsense. Also understand this. They're now creating a new center, the National Security Agency, that will be a yottabyte. And a yottabyte is such a large number of data they can collect that there is no parallel for it anywhere in the universe. And every single one of your private emails, cell phone calls, Google searches, everything will be on there. Even a travel itinerary, a bookstore purchase, and or any even your digital pocket litter, everything they're going to collect and are in the process of doing so. Billions of emails and messages per day, and it doesn't matter where you originate them. Now, who gave them the right to do this? Why aren't we made aware of this? And they have an enormous budget for this. And this is a part of this National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. And yet, they can do anything they want with unlimited amounts of money, and we can't do anything about it. Also, I'm going to deal tomorrow with Glenn Greenwald's commentary about Obama, but there's also something else new, and this is something we should be concerned about. It's H.R. 3523. H.R. 3523. Again, this is H.R. 3523. It's a bad piece of legislation. It's worse than SOPA and PIPA acts, which were prevented from being passed earlier this year. But the lawmakers went ahead and authored this very fascist authoritarian bill that could give them free rein to creep the web in the name of cybersecurity. And it's a piece of legislation dubbed the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, or CISPA. And it's been created under the guise of being a necessary implement in America's war against cyber attacks. But the vague verbiage contained within the pages of the paper would allow Congress to circumvent existing exemptions to online privacy laws and exceptionally, essentially monitor, censor, and stop any and all online communication that it considers a challenge to the American government or to any private corporation. So this is what they're trying to do. So I'm saying, let your legislator say no to H.R. 3523. It's just another piece of Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act. They're doing all this at this time because Americans don't want to address any of this, and they're getting away with it. And finally, we are now moving towards a cashless society. According to Market Oracle and Lee Rockwell, quote, the cashless society and total monetary surveillance. And what they're stating is that they're going to phase out all currencies, and then everyone will have to purchase whatever they're going to purchase with a identity card. And people will think, okay, well, that's a good thing. I don't have to carry cash anymore. Yeah. Now ask yourself this. How much money do you have to pay as a service when you use cash? None. How much do you have to pay when you use only a debit card or credit card? A lot. And now if you have to pay the banks every time you buy anything, that's extra profit to them and extra expense to you. But what if someone deemed you a problem? They didn't like an editorial. They didn't like your body politic. They didn't like you showing up for something. They didn't like what you wrote over the internet that they've secretly read. They can stop you from existing. They can put a hold or restriction. You can't get onto an airplane, a bus, a cab. You can't go to a movie theater. You can't buy food. Do you realize how dangerous it would be if someone had the capacity to keep you from using a card, and if everything was made purchased by card and you couldn't use cash because cash would be suspect? So now we have demonized the use of cash. We're going out of a cash society to a card society. And then in some cases, they'll actually expect people to have implants. That means at any time they want to know where you're at, what you're saying, who you're with, what you're doing, what you're eating, what you're buying, what you're watching, what you're reading. That's where we're going. It's not projected into the future. It's going to be happening now. I just want to give you a heads up on it. So when it finally does happen and you wake up one day and say, what just happened? Well, what just happened was fascism. And it's no longer creeping, it's galloping. Those are my thoughts. Nice to have you with us. I'm Gary Nall. Stay tuned for our next program.